recorded and or transcribed.
Let's call our meeting to order.
Betsy Johnson is now joining.
I'm coming to you from my basement office here. It's always fun to see where everyone else is. We're convened in this new format as the Debt Policy Advisory Commission to update the our analysis and forecast based on the more recent revenue forecast. A couple of quick notes, and then I'm going to turn it over to Laura Wirth for a roll call and Laura Lockwood McCall for presentation. Since we're in this format, we can see lots of people. We have our full attendance and some guests. Thank you, Senator Steiner. If you would be so kind as to keep yourself on mute except when you want to speak, that will be easier so that we're not talking over each other, picking up ambient noise. And we are recording the call. So
Diane Chatting, Representative
Later on. There are a couple of members of the press with us as well, and some other public members who are listening to the conversation as well. With that, Laura Wirth, if you would please call the roll, we can get started.
Yes, Treasurer Reed?
Here.
Representative Nathanson?
Here.
Senator Johnson?
Here.
Timothy Dewey?
Here.
Katie Kelba?
Here.
And additional members, do you want all to just, because I don't have everyone's name, how should we do that?
Well, I think that's it. If anybody else wants to announce themselves, that's fine. But Senator Steiner Hayward, we know, is here as a guest.
Lewis.
That's great.
Is now and joining.
I think with that, we can go ahead. So, Laura Lockwood McCall, you've got a little presentation for us, I think, and we're eager to hear it.
Thank you very much. I'm going to share the screen. Can everyone who's on the call now see it? Hopefully, yes. Somebody say so?
Yes. There's a little delay. Let me also suggest, just as you get started, in the interest of keeping this part of the conversation smooth, there is a button in your screen that has the icon of a hand that if you have a question for Laura in the midst, maybe click on that to raise your hand. That will allow us to manage that part a little more smoothly, I think. So, Laura, please go ahead.
And I do apologize. I have fairly slow internet today, so we'll see how technically I manage. Thank you all for joining us. We took the revenue forecast that was released on May 20th, and we've updated the debt capacity models that the commission reviewed and approved back in January. And the results were probably realistically a little shocking, but we wanted to walk through them today to make sure that the legislature and the governor's office are fully aware of where the debt models stand, so that will help you in your deliberations going forward. So to that end, this report will be attached to a cover letter with the treasurer as chair after the meeting. I've included a page that wasn't in the original draft I sent you that just explains to the rest of the legislature who the commission is and why we're doing this. So here's the beginning of the presentation. Obviously, COVID-19 pandemic has had a huge impact on our debt capacity, and the first area that we look at was the long-term revenue projections. We know that there's big hits, general fund and lottery in the current biennium, but we've also looked at the longer-term revenue forecast that the OEA does quarterly.
Is now exiting.
So the table, the graph on the left shows you the general fund forecast and how it's changed over the since 2019 and 20's reports. Now, the 2019 report was what we based the bond bill that was approved by the legislature in 2019 in June of that year. And we've been issuing bonds off of that master bond bill, with most of the bonds being sold in the last 6 months of the biennium. So not a lot of the bonds that were in the original bond bill have been sold to date, although we've done some refundings. But you can see that the drop in general fund revenues is, you know, a few billion dollars for the next couple of years, and then it slowly grows back and gets closer to what we thought as of the 2020 update report. The graph on the right, however, I think is the more dramatic and has the most immediate and large impact. It's the huge drop in lottery revenue projected for next fiscal year, and it has huge implications for our ability to do lottery bonds this biennium, which I'll get into in a few slides. But you can also see that we're actually fairly optimistic that our lottery revenue capacity was growing based on the green, which was a 2020 report. And with the big drop that we're seeing and then the slow rebuild, it will have some implications on capacity and lottery, particularly going forward. So unless I have questions, I'm going to turn now to the general fund. We used all the same inputs that we used in the 2020 report. Now, at that point in time, we looked at all the debt that was outstanding at the end of the fiscal year. We added in all the bond bill authorizations and the 2019 legislature authorized, which was $946 million. The latest revenue forecast, we're very conservative. We always assume 20-year debt. We assume a very conservative interest rate. I can tell you that we just sold tax-exempt bonds last week, 20-year debt, at a little over 1%. Now, the taxables were about 2%, but still, we're being fairly conservative so that long-term, we're not surprised by rising interest rates. Our goal has been 5% general fund revenues to debt service for the last 15, 20 years, and so we use that as our baseline assumption. Back when we did the report in January, we projected that we had approximately $500 million of additional $315 million of additional general fund capacity available this biennium. But with the drop in revenue, we're projecting that to stay at the 5% target that we've had for a long time, that is only about $200 million. So that's a reduction of about $115 million compared to January. What happens throughout the rest of the biennium is that we pay off the pension obligation bonds in 2027, and we still have a lot of capacity over the next decade. It's a bit of a tightening, if you will, this biennium, and it does affect next biennium because general fund revenues don't really come back in the long-term forecast, so there's a bit of a reduction as well in what we project would be available at the 5% limit in the 21-23 biennium. Now, this page shows you the comparison of what we thought when we published our report in January, and what you can see is we thought that we had $6.3 billion available over the next decade. It's dropped to a little over $6 billion, and you can see if we average it out over time, we're still in good shape, but there is this reduction in the current biennium. The bottom line question, I think, today is, does the legislature want to stay at the 5% capacity target, or is this such an extraordinary period of time with very low interest rates that we need to contemplate whether we would rather go to an averaging approach, whether it's now or starting next biennium? If we chose an averaging approach and we kept debt at $1.45 billion next biennium, we will exceed our 5% target, anywhere from 5.6 to 5.8% next biennium. But over the decade, if we take advantage of that longer-term capacity in the out years, we will remain below the 6% target, and we'll come back to the 5% target by the end of the decade. That's really my findings. I'm opening, if you have questions about general fund.
Are there any questions from commission members?
How sensitive is this forecast to that interest rate forecast? Because as you noted, that is a very conservative forecast, and we can obviously issue a lot of debt now at fairly low interest rates.
It's not terribly sensitive. When we've done sensitivity analysis year after year, it has a modest impact on the margins. What really drives the model is revenue.
Okay.
More than interest rate. I think, you know, we could squeak out maybe another $100 million or two. But I think the bigger question, and we don't need to decide necessarily today as a commission, but the commission may need to think about this coming into the next biennium, whether to recommend an averaging approach for the 21-23 bond bill cycle. Because the difference is in the neighborhood of about $1 billion of additional debt. You know, we chose a 5% level. There was no magic to it. It was just an average among states. There are states that have lower ratios. There are states that have higher ratios. I think what the legislature and this commission and the governor's office need to think about is this is an extraordinary time where we need to invest in really high priority capital projects that are both needed by the state but that will have long-term benefit to the state's economy and to the quality of life in the state. And that might justify raising, you know, going above the 5% target for these high priority long-term improvements. Because it does spur, construction spurs the economy, we know that.
Makes sense. And I think you've told me before, Laura, that it's the rating agencies that they want to see logic and consistency. There's nothing magic about 5%. It's the logic that's behind it that matters to them. Is that
absolutely
fair?
And I think it's also a preference that you don't use debt for one-time budget balancing. Obviously, that hurts.
Right.
And so to the extent that there's a big multiplier effect that you can get from construction or network effects where the types of things that we're financing have spillover effects that can grow a region, then I think that that's a real good reason to consider going above the 5% target.
Mr. Treasurer, this is Betsy. I might defer to my colleague Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. She introduced Representative Rayfield MD to professional colleagues of hers that work for Goldman Sachs and had opined briefly on this 5%. And it may be interesting for the group to hear a quick summary of what their thoughts were.
And Mr. Treasurer, I will have a comment I want to make also.
Sure. Well, here's Representative Hayward, and then go to Representative Nathanson, please.
Thanks. And I want to be clear that this was a informal, we're not giving you advice conversation. So it was just we were trying to get a sense of exactly this question that Ms. Lockwood McCall asked, which is, how fixed is this 5% number? And I think the points that she made were exactly the points that they made, that 5% is not a magic number. There are states that have as high as 14% of GF as debt service and still have ratings analogous to ours as a state, and basically identical and getting similar rates. And it's because they've used that debt capacity to invest in significant infrastructure projects. I think the more interesting point that they made, and basically, I think the one other point that I would say is this. Our colleague at Goldman, who is their lead municipal debt person for the entire country, said he talks with a variety of people at ratings agencies and other capacities who basically are saying at this point, why aren't states bonding more? Why aren't they taking on more debt? And they've been saying this for a while. Because rates have been so low and because of the economic impact of infrastructure projects and the need, because of so much deferred maintenance and deferred need around most states, we're not the only state that has bridges and dams and roads and buildings that need significant work. So there's a general appetite in the market to see states taking on more debt for the right reasons. The more interesting point I thought that he made was that Senator Johnson asked him about this issue about bonding for operating expenses. And his statement was, for something that's sort of a one-time one-time, you know, as Ms. Lockwood McCall said, it's something that's a one-time, just get us through this biennium kind of thing. They're not so interested in that. But if they're investments in programs that are likely to have a significant ROI in a short period of time, then actually bonding for operations is not necessarily looked at as a problematic thing to do. So I gave the example, I know that Utah did some investment a while ago in more universal pre-kindergarten, especially for higher risk kids, and managed to significantly decrease the number of kids who needed individual education plans when they hit first and second grade. And that's a pretty big cost savings right there, because IEPs are expensive and they tend to reduce graduation rates for these kids. So if you can make those interventions early, then that could be a cost savings. So I think, Betsy, did I leave anything out that was significant?
No, I think that's a good high-level summary.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Nathanson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. When we heard the economic and revenue forecast a few weeks ago, the economists from the Office of Economic Analysis did mention something that many people would know, maybe if you're not a policy wonk, but some people who've been involved in economic forecasting, land use planning, a number of other kinds of endeavors have recognized this pandemic and this economic crisis will change our world forever. The nature of the workplace, the nature of education, the nature of service delivery will be permanently changed in one way or another. There will be long-term economic and revenue changes, you know, could last more than to the middle of this decade. It will take years to work itself out, but there will also be permanent changes in the way things happen, whether it's the way services are delivered or the way education, for example, happens. I think that this is a good time to consider increasing our self-imposed 5% limit. As has been acknowledged, you and others point out, this, we impose this on ourselves. It's a target. We religiously followed that target for many years, but I think now's the time to invest in economic stimulus if it's going to help sustain economic activity, sustain families, and help. I think it will. One of the key questions will be, how do we spend our money? And I want to make sure that we're spending our money investing in the future, not just shoring up the way things used to be. But I think this is a good time to use our leverage and the legislative and executive branches' skills, put all of our best skills into supporting Oregonians through smart investments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments from the commission before we move on to lottery?
I'll just sort of second those comments, is that we certainly have been very conservative over the years, and this is the time that that pays off. Because we've been conservative, we have the room to not be quite so conservative going forward. I think is the other important point here is we don't have a huge debt capacity we've built up, therefore we have some room to build up a little bit more.
Yep. Well said. Thank you.
Mr. Treasurer, if I could add one more point.
Johnson, please. Yes,
I agree with all of the foregoing comments. My admonition is that if we are going to bond, we have been given some guidance and spent a lot of money to get that guidance. I refer to the analysis that the HEC, the Higher Education Commission, did with respect to higher ed bonding and investments in buildings. There might be some way to parse that. I don't know whether building dorms right now, when we don't know what the new model is going to look like, versus rehabbing buildings that make them fit for the new jobs of what will be post-COVID Oregon. I think, though, that we have to exercise a certain amount of rigor in the readiness of those projects to proceed. And I mean by land use planning, permitting, regulatory authority. If we're going to do this bonding, and I am supportive of it, we've got to have some discipline and some rigor.
I agree with that. I think it is nothing that has happened in COVID. I think excuses the comments that we've made as a commission in the past to emphasize deferred maintenance as a priority. And indeed, as you just said, it'll be important to think about what the new world is going to look like. I would also say for myself that I think it is going to be very important for us to think about what's a good investment and not be swayed by the overused terms of shovel ready. We need to be looking at good investments as the priority. And then if there is a stimulative effect, that's a bonus. But I don't think we should excuse the rigor, as you said, of seeking out the good the investments that stand on their own. With that, let's
Mr. Treasurer, if I could just
Senator Hayward.
Thank you, really quickly. One other point, I asked that very question during our about the need for a project being ready to go at the time the bonds were issued. During that conversation with the Golden folks, and they said that, again, the ratings agencies and the people who are buying bonds are more interested in the logic. And so if, for example, the state chose to use a significant amount of forward-looking debt capacity to issue bonds later this year or early next year with a clear plan that we're going to use X percentage of them in the next year, Y percent by the next 3 years, and finish it off in the next 5 years, we don't actually have to have projects that are specifically ready to go as long as we have a rational plan for why we're issuing excess debt right now compared to where we're going.
If I could be clear, under federal securities law, we do need to identify the name of the project.
Oh,
and there are some tax limitations.
Right.
You can only borrow for 3 years in advance of without a special exception. So
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I didn't mean we didn't have to name the projects, Ms. Lockwood-McCall. I just meant that they didn't have to be ready to start in this biennium, for example. So, and obviously there are federal, I'm no expert, but I'm just saying that was a comment that he made in response to our question about the need for quote-unquote shovel readiness.
Dr. Silga, I see your hand up. Was that your previous comment, or did you have something else to add?
I'll just add a couple of things. One is the issue of shovel-ready. I think we have to sort of think about that in terms of Representative Nathanson's comments, is that what was shovel-ready yesterday might not be the infrastructure we need tomorrow. So we should not prioritize necessarily things that are shovel-ready. Senator Johnson made the comment about dorms, for example. The dorm might be shovel ready, but is it really relevant now, given the situation? So I think that's important to notice too. I think that the bond markets are everything is down. They're not going to care about a lot of this. As long as we can give them fill the legal requirements that Laura mentioned, there's a desperate desire for anything that's safe and yielding more than a U.S. Treasury bond. I think that we can move this debt.
If I could add, we just priced bonds last week, and we were 7.7 times oversubscribed in the taxable 20-year bonds, and we tightened our spreads to the point where we priced better than a AAA by 7 basis points. So investment bankers will always tell you to sell more bonds.
That's exactly right.
That is something we should all applaud Laura and her team for. And those are the nice wrap-up comments from Dr. Dewey. Should we move on to lottery?
Yes, we should. But I want to say, but we're going to applaud people. The legislature gets all the credit because of the budget reserves we built up, and that has a lot to do with the strong credit ratings and the real huge appetite by investors.
It sure does, and that's a part of the letter that I just sent to legislative leadership. Definitely worthwhile. But you don't get to, you're included in those applause in terms of the execution, Laura and your team as well. Let's go to lottery, please.
Okay, so lottery's a little bit more painful, as I said.
Yep.
We use the same inputs that we used in the January report, and the big difference here is that it's a revenue bond, and so we have, in our indenture, we say that we will make sure that debt service is basically one-fourth, which is, we say, four times coverage. So it's a maximum of 25% of net lottery revenues. And so that's a promise we make to investors. It's what we build into our model. And so updating the model for the forecast, we are still have good coverage at 5.3 because we haven't sold the lottery bonds that have been authorized this biennium. We were not planning on selling those lottery bonds until next spring. Well, by next spring, the forecast for 21 that I showed you several pages ago will be at 3.1 times coverage. So we will not qualify if the revenue forecast continues to hold at this rate by next spring. We will not be able to do additional bonds under our indenture. And you probably realize that with a drop in revenues, debt service is the number one priority in the Constitution. So we'll be consuming 32% of lottery revenues based on the current forecast, which means everybody else down the line gets less lottery revenues. It's why we have such a strong credit rating and are able to borrow lottery revenue bonds at such attractive interest rates. The model then says, okay, as revenues come back up, and we're at that maximum of four times coverage, how much is available over the course of the biennium? We pay off lottery debt fairly rapidly, so you can see that over the biennium, even if we take the break, we do have $1.8 billion in capacity. This chart shows you what we thought we had for the decade back in January, which was $2 billion. So it's not an enormous drop necessarily in lottery capacity over the decade, but it is very much over the next few years. Now, I went into the model that Josh Lerner prepares, and I went on a month-by-month basis to just see when will we get back to four times based on the current forecast. And from my eyeballing it, we will be just at four times with existing debt sometime towards the spring of 2022. The question will be, you have to have an increment above that four times because additional bond tests includes the new debt service. So theoretically, a portion of the stuff that was approved in the 1921 bond bill, maybe we could finance by 22. But I think to be on the safe side, it's likely that we'll have to wait if the balance of those projects are still the projects that the legislature wants to finance. It'll have to happen in 23. It's a shame because there's a lot of really wonderful infrastructure projects that are exactly the kinds of things we've been talking about that are needed, either for seismic resiliency, for healthcare needs, recapitalization of the Special Public Works Fund. There's projects for levees. There's dam projects. And so there are mostly local government-based infrastructure projects that would really be great things to be financing right now. But unfortunately, if we stick with the current indenture, that's probably what we're going to have to wait to see. We will continue to monitor these quarterly forecasts. We'll get one in September. We'll get one in December so that when the legislature comes into session, the regular session next year, we can continue to provide feedback to the legislature as to what it looks like we'll be able to do in terms of bonds. Most unlikely this biennium, unless lottery suddenly recovers dramatically, and when in 22 and 23 we might be able to sell additional bonds. That's it for my presentation.
You're right. Lottery is a lot more painful than general obligation. Are there any questions or comments from members, please?
Mr. Chair, it's Katie. I actually raised my hand.
Excellent. Thank you.
So I have a procedural question. The legislature authorized the issuance of the bonds. We don't have, at least based on the current forecast, the the coverage that's required, does the legislature have to make a change to the authorizations that they have provided, or does the treasurer basically have the authority based on revenue forecast to not issue the bonds?
My understanding, and Laura, you should correct here, is that unless there were an additional change to the coverage requirements, we would not go ahead. Is that right?
I think that's correct, and I think your cover letter to this report is going to say that.
Yep.
I'm not a lawyer, but under 286A, the treasurer ultimately makes a decision as to sell bonds based on market conditions, and this is simply. The only way we could do this is we opened up a junior indenture, lower credit rating, lower coverage, higher interest rate. I think at the current moment we're frozen out. We can't do it, and we would need to let the legislature know that. And hopefully, your cover letter will do that.
Yep.
And so I have a follow up. Let's say the lottery bounces back, the revenue forecast for lottery bounces back somewhat in September. And it means that for whatever reason we free up some capacity, but not enough capacity to cover all of the authorization the legislature provided. What happens then? Does the legislature go back and reprioritize those that they've authorized? You wait for guidance from the legislature?
I think we'd wait for guidance. We can give the numbers, but at the end of the day, I don't know what you think, Treasurer, but my advice would be is to relook through that overall list that was approved in the House bill. I want to say 50-90. I could be wrong. Maybe it was 50-30. And maybe capital construction needs to meet and make some decisions. We weren't scheduled to sell until March.
I think we would look for an opportunity, perhaps. I mean, the governor and my understanding the conversation now is that this special session that happens next week is not going to take up bonding questions, so a future one might, and we might want to have the conversation along the lines of what you just suggested, Ms. Koba, so as to say, if there does have capacity, we'd like your guidance on what are the priorities, what's the order amongst that maybe less than 100% capacity that might become available. So we've got time to iron that out. I wish we had reason to think that the lottery is going to be back at 100% really quickly. Time before that happens.
I guess my comment, Betsy.
Yes, please.
With respect to this list, is that readiness to proceed and efficacy of investment are things that I think need to be scrutinized off this list. I think the legislatures in the room and former legislators in the room know that this list is inherently political, and I happen to have it in front of me right this moment, and I'm looking at it. There are some projects on here that would be using up capacity diminished as it is, but have no demonstrable efficacy. They are domino effect projects, and my big concern is breaking into this list and making judgments about what should proceed and what shouldn't, even with a modest restoration of lottery capacity. This is going to be a difficult process to pick and choose the winners and losers off of this list.
You're certainly right, Senator, and I would suggest that you and the other current legislators are in a unique position in having two roles. In the commission process, it's my opinion that what we should do is talk about characteristics and the types of projects without naming them specifically. You as legislators can participate in that exercise here, and then in your role as legislators, as distinct from commissioners, would have to get into the politics of the specific projects, and I might have opinions on those as well, but I think that's for our roles outside of the commission. So I think you make a really good point. Other comments or questions here? If not, I think what we will do is I think there's definitely consensus amongst the commission, and I certainly share in that as to the narrative that can accompany those numbers, and we'll do our best to reflect that in the cover letter that goes with these slides. But as Laura Lockwood McCall said at the top, Our intention is to confine the transmission or the release to these slides and remind folks that this stands as kind of an addendum to the full report that we did more recently and is intended to incorporate the more recent revenue forecast numbers and be there for you and your colleagues in the legislature as you consider the route forward. Any other comments? I guess I should say, since we have a number of guests, that since we're not making decisions and this format doesn't really lend itself to public comment, we'd be happy to take public comment in written form. Feel free to email us, write us. We'll consider those comments going forward, but it probably makes sense to confine it to that. If there's nothing else, we can begin to wrap up here. Appreciate Laura and your team giving us this good conversation and the input from all the members. Laura, you wanted to say something, looks like.
I do have one thing, and maybe it's a ray of hope in a dark day. We finished up the GO bonds, the Q bonds, and some M&M, so we do have $50 million of new money that's going towards seismic grants for public schools. We just closed that this morning, so that's good. And then there's another pot of $95 million that's going for permanent supportive housing and lift grants. So I want to let you know that there is a lot of money, bond money, that's going out the door, the general fund supported type, to fund projects. And so that is getting into the economy. So I think that's really good news. As I mentioned, we sold through a AAA scale. Our all-in cost of funds was the lowest that I've ever done in my career, which is either good or bad, depending on what you think about interest rates. It allowed us to do a refunding at the same time, and we saved general fund $28 million in savings, debt service savings. And so that's another good thing. And then lastly, I'm starting to work with staff and my bankers on refunding some of the dorm debt that was mentioned earlier. It's called the 11F debt that's supposed to be self-supporting. And with interest rates as low as they are, we had planned to refund that debt back in April, but the markets were just crazy, so we waited. And we're going to do it in early July. And right now, if rates hold, we're talking about being able to provide refunding savings in the $40 to $50 million range to the public, to the universities. They're deciding today among themselves where they want to take level debt service with no principal in the coming fiscal year, where they want us to concentrate and take a lot of savings over the next 3 years. They all have to agree one way or the other because we've pooled their debt and we can't really structure it school by school. So the 8 universities, including OHSU, are meeting sometime today to talk about the approach. And I don't want to overpromise, but if rates hold in July, our credit rating was reconfirmed stable, and it said investors really like our credit. And so I'm hoping to at least provide some debt service relief in these troubled times.
That is really good news, and further cause for applause for you and your team. It bears repeating, legislators, this is the kind of work that that Laura and her team are always doing behind the scenes, even if it doesn't get headlines and attention. So good work, Laura's and team.
Well, we'll celebrate after we close on that one, though. Mid-July.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Great. Very good.
That's it.
Okay. Anything else, members? Thank you for being here. Thanks for the good discussion. Let's keep moving forward. We're going to adjourn the meeting, and thank you all again. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for allowing me to participate.
Thank you.
Harry Lewis is now exiting.